Thank you very much for sticking around for the last talk of the day. My name is Dan Wallach. I'm going to be telling you about some research we're doing at Rice. Since I've saw a lot of people taking pictures of the screen, I thought I'd save you some effort. You can download a PDF. There's a QR code, so you only have to take one picture. So that will get you the very same slides that I'm projecting here on the screen. I should just tell you as a preface that this is research at Rice University supported by Samsung. I do not speak for Samsung, I do not work for Samsung, and if you have a problem with what Samsung was doing, I can't help you. Okay, so on to the talk. This is a large set of people working on this together. I have to give credit to my co-researchers at Rice. A lot of people have worked on this. Right, Tizen, as you know, there's like the web APIs and the native APIs. Today I'm going to be focusing on the native APIs, which are compiled to LLVM, the low-level virtual machine. So similar to what we saw in the previous talk about an app store, you the developer, build your application, you compile it, you get LLVM bitcode, you ship it to the store. At that point, what you saw in the previous talk was a static analysis system. I'm going to be describing a more sophisticated static analysis system with similar goals. The idea is that there are security rules that feed into the static analysis system that say good or bad things about the app, and then an analyst looks at the reports and says, well, this shouldn't be a problem, or wait, they missed something, so then they're going to build new rules, and around we go. That's the general idea. So we want to be able to analyze apps prior to deployment, and this is a little bit different from how Apple and Google do it. Apple has a very human-intensive process, and they don't tell anyone how it works. It's all very secretive. The Google Play Store is actually remarkably sophisticated. They do both static and dynamic analysis, and they won't tell you anything about it. You just have to read between the lines or read people who've tried to reverse engineer it. But it is certainly the case that for both Apple and Google, stuff gets through, and then they have to change the analysis post facto, or they have to kick apps out after they've shipped. But LLVM is a really interesting way to ship code. Unlike ARM binaries, it's actually very easy to analyze LLVM bitcodes. You have most of the same high-level semantics of source code. For example, when you do a function call, it's just a single LLVM call instruction. You don't have all the register saving and all of the preamble and everything you have to do on the low-level hardware to do a function call. Here it's one line. So that really simplifies the process of writing a program to analyze the behavior of an LLVM binary. And you can deal with multiple source languages. Java bytecode is really all about the Java source language, and whereas LLVM is meant to be portable. It's meant to support a lot of different languages. And as a compiler infrastructure, it's fast. So like Apple uses it, whenever you are compiling an iOS app, you are going through an LLVM compiler. If you're using Android's new ART, the Android runtime, that replaces the Dalvik compiler with an LLVM compiler. So LLVM it's the future for a lot of things happening, not just in Tizen. And from a security perspective, it's very straightforward to analyze, and I'm going to tell you about how we can do that. So let's talk about a simple policy. So the previous talk, the OnLabs guys are basically looking for APIs that they think are bad or not bad. We want to do something a little bit more sophisticated here. We want to talk about connecting information flows. So here's a typical policy that you might want to forbid. We want to forbid flows from GPS to internet. That's a typical thing that users might find unacceptable. Like if data is flowing from the GPS to the internet, that's something that's as a high level rule we might want to say no. So I put a simple snippet of code here. You don't have to read it, but you have to notice that there's a place where we call this taint. So a source of sensitive information enters the program here where we ask for the location, and there's a sink where that sensitive information leaves the program. And our analysis goal is to connect sources to sinks. So we need to deal with intermediate variables. We have to deal with conditionals. And that means that we might say that this sample program, this very simple program, might or might not actually leak information about you to the internet, but it could if the conditionals all lined up right. So this means that static analysis can have false positives. It can find flows that might never happen in practice. It's less likely to have false negatives. It's less likely to miss a flow that a dynamic analysis wouldn't see, because no matter how much you push the buttons, you can't necessarily trigger every conditional. But there's a lot of complexity here. Should we assume that every branch gets taken? That means that that there might be things that as a programmer you look at and say, duh, that's never going to happen, but the analysis might not be that smart. Likewise, when you as a programmer see, well, I allocated it over here and I called a method there, so clearly I know exactly where it's going, it's actually harder for the compiler to figure that out than you'd think. So doing pointer analysis to make sure that the thing that you point to is of the type that you thought it was is actually harder than you'd think. Likewise, just when you call a method on an object, you don't necessarily know where it's going. You know, at runtime in C++, you've got vtables or other data structures, so there's a runtime disambiguation of a call target. If you're trying to do a static analysis, you either have to be pessimistic and assume it could go everywhere, or you have to try to do sophisticated analysis to narrow that down. Now, as it turns out, these are the analyses a compiler already does for performance purposes. So in many respects, we can piggyback on program analysis that LLVM is already doing for a performance reason. We can use that for security purposes. But still, we have a challenge. On the one hand, we want to catch all of these subtle little flows that a program might be using to hide its real intent. On the other hand, we don't want to generate a lot of bogus error reports that will cause the human analyst to have to chase everyone down and convince themselves that this is a real problem or a false problem. But as it turns out, this is a well-understood area of computer science research. People have been working at this for decades, so there's nothing really new here in terms of the research. We still have to worry about what's called declassification. How can I say that, yes, I know there's a flow here, but this one is okay, trust me. So I have to have a way of building in exceptions to the rules so that way I don't generate warnings that don't need to be there. I mean, I need to do all kinds of tricks. I need to invent pragmatic heuristic tricks to reduce the load on the analyst who's in that app store trying to decide what should be allowed or should be forbidden. So we've been working on this for about a year now. Here's where we're at. Right now, we can do whole program analysis on Tizen native apps, but not JavaScript apps and not the Tizen libraries or the Tizen, Linux kernel. So that means we have to have some special kludges to deal with callbacks, and we've written a bunch of these information flow rules, and we have about 30 Tizen apps that Samsung gave us the source code to. So what happens? Well, one of them triggered one of our rules. Turns out the friend finder will transmit your contacts to the Bluetooth, and that was one of the sources and syncs that we tagged. So other than that, our report seems to be correct. No false positives, no false negatives. So we can find things like this in an automatic way. And those are things that an analyst might be interested in. So let me tell you about the work that we're now doing. If you went earlier to the talk, the artichoke talk, they were discussing a problem where, okay, so you, at the bottom there's your OS kernel, that's your Linux kernel with SMAC policies, and at the top there's your app, and there's all these Tizen libraries in between. And there may or may not be a place where it cuts out and jumps over to a service, whether it's through dbus or some other interface. And in theory, you'd like to think that the APIs are orthogonal, that the Bluetooth API has nothing to do with the networking, which has nothing to do with the file system, which has nothing to do with the fonts, which has nothing to do with the camera. Wouldn't that be nice? Wouldn't that make the security analysis really simple? Unfortunately, that's not how it works. Unfortunately, these APIs make all sorts of little calls where you start over here and you end up over there, and that really means that it's difficult for you to, a priori, control who's allowed to do what, because from below, you can't tell where you came from up above. You can take pictures, but my slides are all online. But yeah, so for those of you who came in late, I'm going to make your life a little bit easier and say, that's all you need. That will get you my PDF, and then you can follow along. I see everybody taking pictures of slides. I'm like, dude, the internet. So, you know, yes, everybody got the QR code? All right. I see the cameras clicking. All right, moving back to where we were through my animations that are trying to animate themselves. Sorry about this. I'm just trying to save your lives. So the problem you have is that your SMAC policies end up being too permissive. That, you know, if the Bluetooth stack happens to call into the network stack, then anything that allows Bluetooth is also allowing networking or something. This is just a general problem, and we need to have a broader solution to it. So let me give you a little bit of history here. Let's go in the Wayback Machine to 1996. Everybody remember 1996? So I was a summer intern at Netscape, this hot new startup at the time. Maybe you've heard of them. Well, didn't work out so well for them. But, well, I guess they got bought by AOL, so that wasn't too bad. But anyway, here are a bunch of historical Java vulnerabilities that we can talk about as analogies. So there was a URL handler. You could say open java.net.url, and you could ask for an HTTP URL or a file URL. So that means that we want to be able to say no when you open a file URL, because, you know, file system is bad for an untrusted applet, but we still want to let you get to the network, because that's the whole point. You're a network applet, right? Likewise, there was a really nasty security bug in the font system. The font people didn't think about security. They think about fonts. Well, you could ask for a font with a weird name with dot dots and stuff in it, and you could convince the font system to open an arbitrary file on the file system for you. Oops. These are the kinds of security bugs that we need to avoid, and, you know, are these vulnerabilities in the Tizen library? I don't know, and neither does anybody else. So how do you fix that? So our first task is we want to be able to build a mapping. I want to be able to go across the entire surface of all of the published Tizen APIs and tell you all of the low-level resources that they're going to eventually consume. This will make your job easier when you're trying to build a SMAC policy. And of course, that's something that I could even have it output SMAC rules, maybe. That could be so, and then of course, the differential analysis. If some developer adds an extra line somewhere, you'll know. And then you can either go smack the developer, or the developer will smack you. Yeah, who knows? This is politics. I'm just the technology guy. But anyway, our goal is to be able to have this mapping and be able to watch it as it changes and be able, and this helps the security people working inside the Tizen system to be able to control what everybody else in the Tizen system is doing. I mean, just even, you know, knowledge. Knowledge is power. Okay. You could also imagine this would be really valuable for the app developer, because now the permission model can be written abstractly in terms of access to the Bluetooth API. You can build in terms of these abstract W3C things, and you can map those to the high-level APIs, and then the App Store can deal with saying, well, you are or are not allowed to call these APIs based on the permission you've requested. And at that point, you take some of the load off the SMAC system, and you're placing the load into the App Store static analysis, which happens ahead of time. And I think that would be a really valuable way of layering and connecting the systems together. Now, I mentioned that sometimes you want to build exceptions to the rules. So this is Java syntax, but you could imagine, you know, just make everything three times as long and uglier, and this could be the C++ code in Tizen. But anyway, imagine if we want to build this URL handler that happens to know how to deal with file schemas. So, but then imagine that, so we normally want to say no to the file system access unless our network system wants to keep a cache. So if it's an HTTP URL, it'll go look in the cache and see if it can give you a quick answer. This is the kind of exception that we don't want, that we want to be able to allow something weird like this because it has good performance properties. But to do it, we're going to have to say, hey, security analysis system, don't screen here. Which means we need to have some way of having a pragma, a statement, a no, this time it's okay. So in information flow parlance, this is a declassifier. we're saying that this particular taint flow is okay. So this is one of the things that we need to be able to do. Now, here's an interesting question. Do you put these in line in the source code, or do you put them external to the source code in a separate file? If you put them inside, that means that developers who are unrelated to the security get to see them and might insert them in places they don't belong, but it also means that as code gets refactored and moved around, then these things move around too. Whereas if you keep it outside, then as the code moves around, now your annotations break. So both have problems. There's no good answer here, but you have to do it one way or the other. But one of our big goals is to do information flow analysis on the entire Tizen software stack. And that means we need to deal with all kinds of weird things where you wouldn't necessarily think there are connections. We need to deal with global variables and buffer queues, and we need to deal with all the different ways that things can interact with each other where you normally wouldn't think that there's an interaction. Like, and furthermore, we have to disambiguate things. Like, everybody uses hash tables. Everybody uses a number of these core data structures. And just because one API is going through here and another API is going through here doesn't mean there's actually any sharing going on. Because your instance of a hash table and my instance of a hash table have nothing to do with one another. So that's a place where we want to be careful not to flag sharing. So a high level goal, this is a goal, I'm hoping we can achieve this goal, is to have is to be able to prove that these APIs don't actually step on each other's toes. This is a goal. I hope we can achieve it. We also want to deal with IPC. So when I first started learning about Tizen, I said, so what's your IPC interface? And there was chuckling. Which IPC interface? Right? Do you mean DBus? Oh, no. Sometimes we talk through the X server. No, sometimes we talk through the file system. No, sometimes... Well, hopefully you guys tell me, maybe Tizen 3, everybody will do KDBus and all the rest of them will go away, right? Sure. I hope so. Anyway, we want to be able to do analysis that crosses these IPC boundaries because we want to be able to worry about service providers that might be providing an interface that could turn them into the services that might be a danger to themselves. So there have been a number of Android apps that have been found to have this problem. Like there was a problem with the Google Maps app where you could send it an intent and it would tell you where you were. So even if you didn't have GPS permission, you could send an intent to Maps and Maps could be tricked into telling you where you were. Right? In security parlance, that's a confused deputy problem. Confused deputies are bad, and as the Samsung Tizen library is factored into services, which is a good thing, you should be breaking these monolithic libraries into independent services. Services might still be trickable into misbehaving. So we need to be able to analyze each service in and of itself and prove that they don't accidentally expose things. Which means that as the artichoke APIs evolve, we want the security analysis to notice that you make an artichoke call and that's okay. So I need to know more about what you're doing. And I think there's a lot of chance, opportunity for these to play together nicely. So ultimately, we can do simple things like verify that the APIs that an app calls are consistent with the permissions that it thinks it needs. Or for that matter, why have a programmer specify the manifest? Why not derive the manifest from the code? We could do that. That's easy. And as the Tizen ecosystem evolves, there will eventually be known patterns of bad behavior. And those patterns of bad behavior are easy to search for statically. And again, less load on the SMAC system, which I think is good. Now, if you think about this not from a malicious app perspective, but from a I want to debug the Tizen library ecosystem, I want to debug the Tizen kernel and libraries and services, if you put on that hat instead, there are so many developers contributing so much code to what is becoming Tizen that there's just no way that you can ever, as the security team, chase after all the new code that's being added all the time. So you security people need help. I'm trying to provide some of that help. I'm trying to find paths that can be used for abuse, and hopefully that's something that the security team can go and either treat them as bugs and fix them, or try to reject apps that exercise those paths, one or the other. And that's basically my talk, and I'd love to take questions. Over here. So my understanding, and you guys probably know better than me, that somebody realized that JavaScript and HTML5 and all that is great for some things, but not for everything. And there are some times that you really want the performance that comes with a native app, but you want the flexibility to switch from ARM to Intel, so what are you going to do? Right? So the Android answer is you ship Dalvik bytecode, and it's compiled at install time on the phone. The Tizen answer is you ship LLVM bytecode, and that's compiled somewhere. I'm not sure where. So you can imagine that a number of Tizen apps are built in precisely this way. So a number of Tizen apps are native. This particular project that I'm describing today is all about analyzing those native apps and the Tizen core libraries. Now, there's a whole other project at Rice that I'm not talking about, also Samsung funded, to do JavaScript analysis, because you might imagine that Samsung is interested in that too. And that's a whole other project I'm not personally engaged in, and you could see how that and this would fit together in a nice, happy harmony. Yes?
Aren't most of the Tizen native apps compiled using GCC?
My understanding is that Tizen itself is compiled with GCC, but Tizen apps are compiled with LLVM. Now, in our lab, I had a student who I said, make Tizen compile with LLVM. And he's like, but it uses GCC. I'm like, do it. He's like, argh. So a month later, he's got it working. So it's, yeah, LLVM is a sufficiently mature tool chain that's not an outrageous thing to ask for. So if you compile, but GCC doesn't know how to output LLVM bytecodes, does it?
Yeah.
So GCC will dump out ARM binaries.
Or x86 binaries.
Yeah. And so I don't speak for Samsung. I don't know what's going to go, whether the Samsung App Store will allow one or the other. I mean, but we said we want to work on LLVM, and they said that's great. So, yeah.
You mentioned a project about 30 apps containing sources that would be available. Is that a platform that you have to buy for screening apps that are coming in, or is that just a one-time study?
So that was, we said, hey, Samsung, we want a lot of native apps so we can analyze them. And they said, well, there are these 30 over here, and that's what we have right now. I mean, at some point, I could imagine that Samsung might take our work and put it into production somewhere in their app store, and then I wouldn't get to see how it was running. But at least today, that's what I've got.
If some security company approached you and said, give you 300 apps, you'd be willing to work with that?
That would be fantastic. Talk to me later.
Yeah, absolutely. So, using this during the development process to determine whether things are going to arrive early on?
So this is an interesting question. You could imagine so let's say I've built an oracle, and this black box, you feed it an app, and it says good or bad. And you want to use that as part of your security perimeter in the App Store. Do you want to give developers your black box? So the yes argument says that developers should be aware that they're doing something bad, so that way they cannot do the bad thing. The anti-argument says that you don't want developers to know what they can get away with in advance. You know, I mean, this is why Google is super secretive about what goes on inside Bouncer. Like, one of the Google engineers who designed it was able to give two talks before he was stepped on by upper management, and now he's not allowed to talk anymore. That's kind of unfortunate. So I can give you arguments in favor of and against. You know, should this technology be put in the hands of developers? Maybe. I can argue it both ways. Well, since I'm standing between you and dinner, thank you very much.